ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नारायणं नमस्कृत्य
नरं चैव नरोत्तमं
नरं चैव नरोत्तमं
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं
देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं
ततो जयमुदीरये
ततो जयमुदीरये
नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु
नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु
नित्यं भागवत सेवया
नित्यं भागवत सेवया
भगवत्युत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी
भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी
Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 1, Text 3. The chapter is titled Genealogical Table of the Daughters of Manu. Prajapatihi
Prajapatihi
Saha
Saha
Bhagavan
Bhagavan
Ruchihi
Ruchihi
Tasyam
Tasyam
Ajijana
Ajijana
Mithunam
Mithunam
Brahma
Brahma
Varchasvi
Varchasvi
Paramena
Paramena
Samadhina
Samadhina
Prajapatihi sa Bhagavan
Prajapatihi sa Bhagavan
Ruchistasyam Ajijanat
Ruchistasyam Ajijanat
Mithunam Brahma Varchasvi
Mithunam Brahma Varchasvi
Paramena Samadhina
Paramena Samadhina
Prajapatihi
Prajapatihi
One who is entrusted
with begetting children.
Saha.
He.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The most opulent.
The most opulent.
Ruchihi.
Ruchihi.
The great sage Ruchi.
The great sage Ruchi.
Tasyam.
Tasyam.
In her.
In her.
Ajijanat.
Ajijanat.
Gave birth.
Gave birth.
Mithunam.
Mithunam.
Couple.
Couple.
Brahma Varchasvi.
Brahma Varchasvi.
Spiritually very much powerful.
Spiritually very much powerful.
Paramena.
Paramena.
With great strength.
With great strength.
Samadhina.
Samadhina.
In trance.
In trance.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Ruchi, who was very powerful in his brahminical qualifications and was appointed one of the progenitors of the living entities, begot one son and one daughter by his wife, Ahuti. Purport. The word Brahma Varchasvi is very significant. Ruchi was a Brahmana and he executed the brahminical duties very rigidly. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the brahminical qualifications are control of the senses, control of the mind, cleanliness within and without, development of spiritual and material knowledge, simplicity, truthfulness, faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, etc. There are many qualities which indicate a brahminical personality. And it is understood that Ruchi followed all the brahminical principles rigidly. Therefore, he is especially mentioned, specifically mentioned as Brahma Varchasvi. One who is born of a Brahmana father but does not act as a Brahmana is called in Vedic language a Brahma Bandhu and is calculated to be on the level of Shudras and women. Thus in the Bhagavatam we find that Mahabharata was specifically compiled by Vyasadev for Stri Shudra Brahma Bandhu. Stri means women, Shudra means the lower class of civilized human society, and Brahmabandhu means persons who are born in the families of Brahmanas but do not follow the rules and regulations carefully. All of these classes are called less intelligent. They have no access to the study of the Vedas, which are specifically meant for persons who have acquired the Brahminical qualifications. This restriction is based not upon any sectarian distinction, but upon qualification. The Vedic literatures cannot be understood unless one has developed the Brahminical qualifications. It is regrettable, therefore, that persons who have no Brahminical qualifications and have never been trained under a bona fide spiritual master nevertheless comment on Vedic literatures like the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. For such persons cannot deliver their real message. Ruchi was considered a first-class Brahmana, and therefore he is mentioned here as Brahma Varchasvi, one who had full prowess in Brahminical strength. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svahadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Satrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Krishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So from the time of the beginning of the universe, how the universe became populated with so many living entities is being described. This is the beginning of the process. It all starts with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears within every universe as the Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. And then from his navel emerges a lotus stem. On top of the lotus stem is a flower, and on top of that flower is situated the creator Brahma. Brahma is bewildered about the act of creation. He situates himself in penance. The Supreme Lord appears from within and without and guides him in the process of creation. He sets about the task with due diligence and resourcefulness. And gradually he starts generating offspring. At this time he's all alone. So how can he generate offspring? Brahma is not an ordinary living entity in the sense that even though he is a jiva like us, he has enormous powers and capacity which we cannot even imagine. And from his mind, he generates offspring to start with. That is called Manasaputra. Offspring generated from the mind. He just thinks and they come out. And from different parts of his body and mind, different offspring are generated. And then the males and females cohabit, and then further progeny are produced. So naturally, at this stage of the creation, there is intermingling between a family, but then there is no other option. And as I was mentioning yesterday, ultimately we are all, you know, descendants of this in that sense. So anyway, the individuals who were selected for the task of procreation were called Prajapati. Their specific service to the Supreme Lord via Brahma was to generate progeny so that the universe would get populated. And the jivas, who from the time of the previous creation were dormant, residing in Vishnu, waiting for the next creation to begin, now would get the opportunity to get suitable bodies and suitable planets and suitable circumstances according to their destiny in the previous life, in the previous creation. And they could continue their sojourn in this material world, which has been going on from time immemorial. And it would continue to go on for time eternity until they actually began to take shelter of Lord Krishna. So these Prajapatis were numerous. In the previous canto we have seen the example of Kardama Muni. He had 9 daughters and 1 son through Devahuti, who was the other daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. And now Akuti, the first daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, is being described. She married Prajapati Ruchi, again a Prajapati, and his name was Ruchi. And as we discussed yesterday, Swayambhuva Manu entered into an agreement. There were no lawyers in those days, so it was merely verbal agreement, and verbal agreements were sufficient. Nowadays, even written agreements don't suffice. So on verbal agreement, it was decided that the son who would be born of Ruchi and Akuti would be adopted by Swayambhuva Manu. In other words, Swayambhuva Manu would adopt his grandson as his son. And such a son is called a Putrika Putra, as we mentioned yesterday, in accordance with the principles of Putrika Dharma. So this was an accepted practice. Normal adoption was also in vogue. Later on in the Vedic culture we see that. For example, Maharaj Dasharath from the Ramayana had 4 sons, Ram, Bharat, Shatrughna and Lakshman. But he also had a daughter, and this is not very commonly known. And his daughter's name was Shanta. And she was adopted by a king called Romapad because he had no offspring. And since Maharaj Dasharath had 4 offspring already, and Romapad Maharaj was his friend, so happily he offered his daughter in adoption to Maharaj Romapad. Eventually Shanta was married to a sage called Rishyashringa. So adoption is quite commonly seen in the scriptures in the Vedic history. But this was a specific kind of adoption, which was also permitted, this Putrika Dharma, adoption according to Putrika Dharma, where a person with no offspring, with no son, could take the son of his daughter as his son, adopt, by adoption. In this case, as we have seen, Swayambhuva Manu already had 2 sons, but he nevertheless invoked the principle of Putrika Dharma to enter into an agreement with his son-in-law, because he knew that the son would be an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, Yajna. And then Akuti and Prajapati Ruchi had 2 children. They must have been twins. There was a boy and a girl. So the boy was Yajna, The girl was Dakshina. The boy was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. The girl was an incarnation of Goddess Lakshmi, the Goddess of Fortune. They are eternal consorts. So even though they may have appeared as brother and sister from the worldly point of view, but they were eternally consorts, or are eternally consorts in the spiritual world. So there was no issue in their marrying from that point of view. So Swayambhava Manu was a little relieved that Prajapati Ruchi had another offspring, and that the child, the boy, was not the only child. So then he adopted this boy who was Yajna. Now in this verse that we are discussing today, it is mentioned that Prajapati Ruchi, the husband of Akuti and the son-in-law of Swayambhuva Manu, the father of Yajna, was an exceptionally qualified Brahmana. And the word Brahma Varchasvi has been used, which has been explained by Srila Prabhupada at length in his purport, to indicate that one who is spiritually very powerful. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that this is a significant term because Ruchi was a Brahmana and he had acquired the required Brahminical qualifications to be called a genuine Brahmana. In the modern day and age, the word Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra is much misunderstood. These have become much maligned terms. But we see that this was not always the case. Because the word Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they indicated people of certain qualifications, not necessarily of birth. It is only in Kali Yuga, and perhaps just in the last few thousand years, not even the full scope of Kali Yuga, that people started identifying the Varna, that is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, with birth. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. My creation, Maya Srishtam. So the four Varnas, Chatur Varnyam, are my creation, Krishna says. So this is the classification of the society that has been done by the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna himself. And therefore it is perfect. There can be no flaw in such an arrangement because the Lord himself is perfect and complete. Nevertheless, what renders it imperfect is when the original pure system established by the Lord is distorted by humanity. Originally, of course, this classification happened according to guna and karma. Guna means the qualities. Now we all know from the study of the Bhagavad Gita that there are three modes of material nature: mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. And according to the scriptures, one who is in the mode of goodness is called a Brahmana. One who is in the mode of passion is a Kshatriya. One who is in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance is a Vaishya. One who is in the mode of ignorance predominantly is a Shudra. And there are others who are so deeply in the mode of ignorance, there are other names for them, other categories. So basically nowhere is the question of birth indicated. It's not that birth is not important, because according to one's past karma, one gets a certain kind of family, a certain kind of birth and parentage. So for example, we see commonly that people born in a business community also automatically have business in their blood. Yes, you may have noticed that. There are people who acquire this by birth, but it's because they have that karma from the past, which is why they got that birth. But there are also many instances when People born in a family with a certain quality or tendency have quite another tendency. So there may be instances, for example, of a child born in a business community or family but has the least interest in business and wants to do something quite different. So we can understand that birth, although significant, is not the determining criterion to decide the varna of a person. Somehow or the other, the varna became degenerated into what we call the jati or the caste. And then that became stratified and fixed. And then the determination of whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra came according to one's birth. But that was not the original system. The original system was guna and karma. What qualities are we governed by? Everybody who is born in this world is governed by the three modes of material nature. And then according to the qualities that influence us predominantly, our karma or our activities will be decided accordingly. So a person in the mode of goodness acts in one way. A person in the mode of passion acts in another way. A person in the mode of ignorance acts in yet another way. Of course, the classifications and divisions are not as neat and cut and dried as we might think. It's a spectrum of qualities. The mode of passion, goodness, ignorance, we all have a bit of everything. Some people may have more of goodness and something of passion, very little ignorance. Some people may have a lot of passion, less goodness, and less ignorance. Somebody may have a lot of ignorance, very little of passion and goodness, and so on. So all these three modes coexist in people, and accordingly one may be called a Brahmana, and so on. So Brahmana is nothing but somebody who is in a priestly tendency, who has a priestly tendency as in an intellectual. That's all. A Kshatriya who is one who has the nature to be a warrior or a statesman. A Vaishya is one who has a tendency to be a business person or a farmer or something like that. A Shudra is one who has a tendency to perform various kinds of labor and crafts and so on. There is nothing that is demeaning about any of these. It's just that there are people with different natures who exist in this world. And this cuts across all different countries and lands and faiths and cultures. In every land, you will see people who are intellectually inclined. In every country, in every place, you will see people who have a business tendency. Some have a martial spirit. Some are more interested in more mechanical activities. So we can understand that these tendencies, the Brahminical tendencies, Kshatriya tendencies, etc., prevail everywhere in the world. So it's not a question of addressing somebody as a Brahmin because he or she is born in a Brahmin family. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains the qualities of a Brahmana. Shramo tamas tapas shaucham kshantir arjavam evacham. Kshantir. So the word kshanti is also very important here. As I read it, all the words. Jnanam vijnanam astrikyam brahma karma svabhavacham. He starts off by saying that a person who is a Brahmana is known by the above mentioned qualities. Shamaha. Shamaha means one who is peaceful. How can one be peaceful? One is peaceful when one's thoughts are controlled. When one's mind doesn't dwell on the material world and especially on increasing one's sense gratification. In one place, Srila Prabhupada mentions that one should not ponder too much on how to increase one's wealth. Because people tend to daydream a lot about how they can make more money. And we think we make so many plans and we do this and that and we have so many ideas, we get absorbed in that completely. So then the mind can never be peaceful. So excessive absorption of the mind in materialistic matters renders the mind devoid of peace. So the power of thought has to be directed, Srila Prabhupada says, in the association of people who have pure thoughts, in the association of people who are spiritually minded, who are authorities in the scriptures. So by associating with such people, the tendency of our mind to be engaged in materialistic thoughts will be changed and diverted to spiritual subjects. So therefore, one can be peaceful when one contemplates on spiritual matters. The next is Damaha, which means sense control. The senses need some engagement and gratification. But Prabhupada explains that such gratification should be reasonable and proper, not improper and unreasonable. Excessive attempts at excessive sense gratification or illicit sense gratification is prohibited in the scripture because then that will disturb us in our quest for spiritual perfection. So control of the senses is very important. Shamo, Damaha, Tapaha. The third is austerity. Austerity means to voluntarily accept rules and regulations that we may otherwise not be so naturally inclined to accept for the sake of our spiritual progress. Actually, we follow such rules and regulations or restrictions on ourselves all the time. A student doesn't like to study but studies so he or she gets good marks and gets admission to a university and so on. Similarly, a professional or a businessman may not like to be in the shop all day long, but because that's necessary for keeping the clients happy, so he's there. So we do that all the time, even in ordinary life. But the tapaha, or austerity mentioned here, is austerity that is intended for spiritual progress. Austerities means following rules and regulations that will help us to make spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of rising early in the morning and bathing. A big thing, isn't it? By today's standard, someone who does that is heroic. Who gets up early in the morning nowadays? Unless they're forced to go to work or something. And they have to grumble like anything. People would rather just sleep on and on and on. Another example Srila Prabhupada gives is of fasting on certain prescribed days of the month, like Ekadashi. Who likes to fast? We like to feast. But we also fast for the sake of our spiritual progress. So this is austerity. Shamo Damaha Tapaha. And then Shaucham. Shaucham means purity or cleanliness, internal as well as external. External cleanliness means we keep the body and our surroundings clean. And internal means we keep our thoughts clean and pure, keep our consciousness very pure. So, shamo, damaha, tapaha, shaucham, kshantir. Kshantir also means tolerance. Tolerance is very important because if you don't have the capacity to tolerate, one will become very disturbed. And life presents innumerable opportunities every day that cause us so much irritation. Can you relate with that? Whether you're driving a car, whether you're living at home, even if you're sitting in a class, you know, there's innumerable factors that cause us irritation. We have to learn to tolerate these factors that irritate us. Every little thing irritates us, annoys us. And it's very difficult to tolerate these things. So, but we have to tolerate for the sake of our own peace and mind, peaceful mind. And especially, tolerance is linked to the quality of humility. Because when one cannot be humble unless one has learned to tolerate affronts and dishonor to oneself. Srila Prabhupada defines humility as being freedom from the desire to seek honor and prestige. So one has to tolerate the opposite. So tolerance is a very important qualification. Arjavam. Arjavam means honesty. Honesty means to speak the truth in a simple and straightforward way and not hesitate to present the truth as it is. That doesn't mean we should be harsh and unnecessarily hurtful of others in the name of being truthful. But the point is that we must be truthful and live by the truth. Kshantir arjavam evacha jnanam, knowledge. Srila Prabhupada explains knowledge as being understanding the difference between matter and spirit. Very simple. If you understand what is eternal, what is not eternal, what is temporary, what is not, what's matter, what's spirit, that's knowledge. Anything that doesn't fall into this category from a spiritual point of view is not considered knowledge. There may be many people in the world who are very intelligent. From an ordinary point of view of IQ, they may have 150 or 200 or whatever, some kind of IQ like that. But if they do not have spiritual knowledge, then their intelligence will be misguided. Srila Prabhupada explains intelligence as the capacity to see things in proper perspective. One cannot see things in the proper perspective if one doesn't have the proper knowledge. So intelligence devoid of spiritual knowledge will be misguided, and the more intelligent one is, then one will cause havoc to the world. So the most damage to the world is caused by people who are very intelligent. Isn't it? One who is not so intelligent doesn't have the capacity to cause enormous damage, big scale damage. But when the intelligence is very powerful, but it is not based on spiritual knowledge, then it can create havoc. Then there is vijnana. Vijnana means realized knowledge, scientific knowledge. So it's not that we simply theoretically understand the difference between matter and spirit. We have to also act in accordance with that. We have to realize that knowledge. And then finally there is astikyam, which means faith in God, belief in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So these are nine qualities that Krishna speaks about in this particular verse that I quoted from the Bhagavad Gita. And he says, Brahma karma svabhavajam. So anyone, these are the activities a brahmana will perform in accordance to the qualities that he is born with. So anyone who displays these nine qualities and a few more is called a brahmana. Where does it say that you have to be born in a brahmana family to be a brahmana? It doesn't say that. You may be born in any kind of family, but if you exhibit these qualities, you are a brahmana. Similarly, there are qualities for a kshatriya, qualities for a vaishya. If you exhibit those qualities, you are that. Nowadays, of course, everything is so mixed up. People of one nature perform another kind of activity. Because a Brahmana, strictly speaking, is supposed to be engaging in spreading the message of the scriptures everywhere. That is his function. And because he does so, he doesn't have time to earn his livelihood. And therefore, he is authorized to accept charity. And in fact, he eats on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada says the Brahmana's two functions are to spread the message of the Lord and to eat on behalf of the Lord. But that doesn't mean Prabhupada wants that one should only eat on behalf of the Lord but not preach on behalf of the Lord. So only one who preaches actively and spends his entire life spreading the message of the scriptures and of the Supreme Lord is authorized to eat on behalf of the Supreme Lord. So one who is a genuine Brahmana understands the absolute truth. Brahma janati iti brahmanaha. Brahma janati, one who understands Brahma, the absolute truth, iti brahmanaha, such a person is called a Brahmana. Srila Prabhupada also mentions that generally such Brahmanas understand the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth. But actually speaking, the true Brahmanas are those who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna and who engage in pure devotional service to Him. This is a real Brahmana. So a real devotee actually is even superior to a person who may exhibit other brahminical qualities. What to speak of one who is born in a Brahmana family but doesn't have the qualities of a Brahmana. So these concepts are much misunderstood now, and there's much criticism of the Vedic culture in modern academia and even in the general perception of people. That is why I decided to make this class a little philosophical and clarify these points, because they are so important for us to know. Brahminical culture doesn't mean the promotion and perpetuation of some exploitative group of people who claim superiority for themselves. That's not the way it is meant to be. Every society needs Brahmanas. People who are true intellectuals and who display these qualities. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the four Varnas are compared to the four different parts of the human body, or actually to the universal body. They emanate from the universal form of the Lord. So the Brahmana is like the head. The Kshatriya is like the arms. The Vaishya is like the belly. And the Shudra is like the legs. Now, all four have to cooperate. Now, let's look at our own body. We have all of these. Now, all these work in unison. And by cooperative action, we can perform so many things to fulfill our desires. Now, if you lose a leg, even if you lose both legs, it's definitely a problem. It's a big disturbance in our life. But we can survive, even though there's difficulty. If you lose your arms, there's something wrong with your arms. And there are people who have such problems. It's very dysfunctional, disruptive, but you can manage. If you have a stomach upset, acidity or whatever it is, you can still manage. But if somebody's head is deranged, what happens? Chaos. Yes? So even though the belly, the hands, the legs are all very important and we must keep them in good shape, in good condition. Nevertheless, relatively speaking, the most important is the head. Because the head is what gives guidance to the rest of the body. It gives guidance to the hand about what activities it should do, what it should lift and how it should move. Similarly to the legs. It also decides what one should eat for the belly and what one shouldn't eat. So the head is, relatively speaking, the most important. And when the head gets deranged, then the whole personality of the person changes drastically. So similarly, the social body, devoid of genuine intelligent people, of brahmanas, becomes chaotic. So our society today is afflicted with a very major problem. The major problem, well, we may say terrorism, this and that, so many other things. But the real problem is lack of true, genuine brahmanas. When there are genuine brahmanas, they will create good, genuine kshatriyas who will then offer protection to the whole world. Then when there are good, powerful kshatriyas, the business community will feel protected and sheltered. And they will do their business activities freely, nicely, enthusiastically, and honestly give taxes to the government. And then when all these three are happy, everybody else who's working in the society will also be content and be happy to serve the others. So this is necessary for a very happy, stable, peaceful society. And the center for all these classes of people is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Even though they may be endowed with different qualities, they may perform different kinds of activities, but their goal ultimately is one. That everybody must serve the Supreme Lord Krishna and try to become his pure devotee. It is just that this is a practical arrangement in life, that we perform activities according to our nature. The nature comes about because of the three modes of nature that are influencing us. Because if I perform an activity that is not suited to my nature, I will not be happy. I will not be stable and properly situated. And therefore, I will not be in a frame of mind to perform my spiritual activities properly. So the Varnashrama system is just a convenient way of organizing society so that every individual, regardless of his or her Varna, Ashram, etc., can progress in a steady and swift way towards Krishna consciousness. Prajapati Ruchi was endowed with all these brahminical qualities. And therefore, he was fortunate enough to have the Lord and his consort as his two children. Not an ordinary thing. Similarly, if grihasthas want good progeny, good offspring, and who doesn't? Everybody wants good offspring. One should also then try to develop good qualities, good devotional qualities, and follow the prescribed processes that are given in the scriptures for begetting good progeny. Then the world will be populated by spiritually minded people, and we will have a spiritual world right here in the material world. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the later part of the purport that it is regrettable, therefore, that persons who have no brahminical qualifications and have never been trained under a bona fide spiritual master nevertheless comment on the Vedic literatures. Like the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas, for such persons cannot deliver the real message. You know, everybody is not supposed to comment on everything. But today, thanks to the internet age, everybody goes for it. Everybody has a view. And very often, they present things in such a harsh and abusive manner. Internet is really full of such harsh criticism. Because everybody thinks he or she is smart enough to come to some conclusion on whatever topic. Everybody is an internet expert. On internet, everybody, whether it's politics or God or anything on the earth, people just left and right make such comments. Internet, the cyber world is havoc. So a person who wants to maintain his or her sanity should regulate that. And don't get involved in too much of the back and forth and the criticism that goes on the internet. And even generally, because this age of liberalism and individualism, I was referring to that briefly yesterday evening in a talk, is where the dominant philosophy is that you can just speak whatever you like, whatever comes to your mind, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, individual liberties, I can decide whatever I want to do, I can lead my life the way I want, I can have whatever beliefs I want, I can speak what I want, I can comment on anything I want. But that is not the way. There are only certain qualified people. You can't comment on something unless you're qualified. It's like a person who doesn't know any mathematics going to a conference of mathematicians, top mathematicians in the world, and critiquing them. You know, your theorem is all wrong, and your is all wrong. Right? Who will accept such a thing? But when it comes to spirituality, when it comes to God, everybody wants to become a self-proclaimed expert, even though they have not been trained under a bona fide spiritual master. That is the main criteria. Unless one has been trained properly and has acquired some brahminical qualification, one does not have the authority to make all kinds of comments on things like that, on subjects of this sort. This is the tragedy of this time. And that is because the head of the social body is not in order. And everybody has this false sense of empowerment. Everybody is puffed up because everybody has access to the internet. They have access to university education and there's freedom of speech. But that is not what Vedic culture is all about. That is not what a sane civilized society should be. Everybody should know what they should speak and how they should speak and what their areas of expertise are. So in any case, this is an important point that Srila Prabhupada is making here, something for us to reflect on in this day and age. We need some calming down of heads where people don't needlessly just speak ill about others and where we relish the words of the scripture, understand that and proceed in Krishna consciousness and make our life perfect. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Yes. You mentioned about four varnas and four ashrams. Is there any relation between which varna can accept which particular ashram? Or is it...
Okay, your question is there a relationship between the varnas and the ashrams, that which varnas can accept which ashram? Yes, generally speaking, there is. For example, a brahmana will go through all stages. He can go through all stages. Brahmachari, vanaprastha. Brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. Perhaps for the others, a shudra should always remain a grihastha. For the others, they can go up to perhaps Vanaprastha, maybe in some cases sannyas. So there was such a correlation. But nowadays it's such a theoretical thing because the whole system has become so disrupted. And neither is it feasible for us to recreate the original Varnashrama system. It's not possible in Kali Yuga. So we just accept certain relevant principles from the Varnashrama system into our Bhagavad Dharma, into our Krishna consciousness, so that we can do our Krishna consciousness properly. That's the adjustment we make. Okay? Yes. Any other question? Yes. You had a question, yes.
If Srila Vyasadeva was the expansion of God, why in the Vedas did he write about sense gratification? And why was he sad after writing the Vedas?
Ah, did you hear that question? The question is that if Vyasadeva was an incarnation of God, then why did he write about sense gratification in the Vedas? Yes? Why did he then feel regretful after doing that? It's an important question. It's because there are people in the world with different mentalities. Not everybody is of the same mentality. There are some people like you who are very spiritual minded. But not everybody is like you. There are many people who are very materialistic. And they have a tendency to act very whimsically and sinfully in life. So Lord Krishna is very kind. So he even wants to assist these people to make some steady progress in their towards their path of spiritual perfection. Since they are not in a position to surrender to Krishna, to render devotional service, because these ideas don't appeal to them. They only want sense gratification. So then the Lord makes an arrangement, all right, you have your sense gratification, but do it according to these rules and regulations. So then, if they follow those rules and regulations, because they have submitted to the authority of the scriptures and the Supreme Lord, they will make gradual advancement over many lives. Then gradually they will come to the point of understanding, actually this sense gratification is all futile. So let me go to Radha Vallabha temple and let me now become a devotee of the Lord. So Vyasadeva was trying to facilitate these people as well. But in the process, he spoke so much about these people that he could not give adequate information that was required by the pure devotees of the Lord, which is glorification of Krishna. Therefore, Narad Muni came and told him, oh, you should have written more about Krishna. So therefore, Vyasadeva then compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? Any other question? Yes.
Thank you for the wonderful talk. My question is, in the last you mentioned about controlling the thought process. So, to what extent and how can we control the thought process? Because it all starts with the thoughts and then somehow we act on that. So, how do we at the first go to check that our thoughts are controlled?
So the question is, how do we control the thought process, the thinking process? Because that was a point mentioned in connection with Shamaha, having a peaceful mind. As I mentioned in the lecture, Srila Prabhupada says that the power of thought must be properly directed in the company of authorities of the scriptures, of saintly persons and spiritual masters. So when one associates with people who have proper thoughts and words and actions, then gradually one's thought process also gets redirected. It becomes purified. So that's the key, the association of devotees. Everything begins with that. Okay? Any other questions? Yes.
Like in my preaching, I meet many people from other religions, and they speak about other scriptures, and it seems like in other scriptures there's a different explanation of the creation. So how do we stand on it? Like, what shall we say? What shall we tell them?
Okay, your question is that in the course of your preaching, you meet people of different religious faiths, and in their books there is a different explanation of creation. Well, it's not really different, it is just more concisely explained. In the Bhagavatam, we have a fairly detailed, technical explanation of the creation process, including how each of the elements of the universal creation is actually manifested, what the sequence is and how it happens. It's very, very detailed. So there's no actual conflict as far as I can see. It's just that different degrees of information are presented. And the language used may be different. Yes? You can explain to them the Bhagavatam process of creation, or even from Bhagavad Gita, the 24 elements of the material nature. And this is called the Sankhya system, philosophy. And you explain to them how the creation has been described in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam.
I will try that.
Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. Come across a number of children who go to very prestigious schools and all that. And what happens is that really the thought force is given to them. They're encouraged to have a very, very critical thinking. And also to challenge everything that they come across. Normally what I've seen is that it's very hard. Especially I haven't seen any success story. Actually, they move away from this party when they've grown up in those families. And I haven't seen them convinced back into the process. They move away, more and more, actually kept on moving away. And it's no logical explanation that actually appeals to them to actually be able to accept this process again.
Yes, your question is that some of the prestigious schools, actually it's everywhere, not only the prestigious schools, that they encourage critical thinking in the students, in the children. And therefore they are encouraged to question everything and anything. And then it's very hard to convince them about God, about Krishna consciousness, about anything. Because they just want to question everything and anything. You see, critical thinking is all right. Because even the Vedic scriptures encourage critical thinking or questioning, atato brahma jigyasa, you must inquire, right? But this critical thinking is a submissive inquiry process. But the critical thinking that is encouraged in the modern day world is very irreverential. To the point of not being willing to accept any authority. So gradually what it does is this thinking mentality is very dangerous because it will erode all forms of authority and nothing is sacrosanct anymore and anything goes and so this kind of highly individualistic critical approach to life, which is a hallmark of the modern day civilization, the liberal world, so to speak, can be very destructive. So we need to encourage the inquiring tendency, because Krishna consciousness is not a process of blind faith. There is inquiry, but there is a mentality, an attitude that goes with that inquiry. It is not criticism for the sake of criticism. It is not criticism in a mood of arrogance, but it is a submissive inquiry process. And one may continue to question. So yes, this is a major flaw of the modern day educational system. And that is why Srila Prabhupada called the modern day educational system as a spiritual slaughterhouse. Because the spiritual instincts of the pupils are destroyed. All forms of traditional culture, even those that are beneficial, are destroyed. So one has to be careful about these things and give the children sufficient spiritual nourishment and intellectual understanding also to be able to withstand this kind of onslaught that is coming from the modern day world outside. The moment you lose all sacred figures and authorities in your life, then what remains? There's chaos. When nothing is sacred anymore for you in life, then what is the condition of that society? We have to be discriminating in distinguishing what is sacred and what is not. That requires knowledge and intelligence. But when you demolish the entire sanctity of some very valuable spiritual knowledge, then you're causing great harm to the society. So Srila Prabhupada wanted devotees to set up their own educational systems like the Gurukul and so on, so that the children could be given the proper education. Any other questions? Yes.
I have a couple of questions, Maharaj. About this thing you mentioned about Prakriti Dharma, adopting the doctor's son when the father doesn't have any son. So Maharaj, in those days they had many mystic powers and they were very powerful. So was that very difficult for them to get a son? That's my question.
Okay, your question is that in those days when the Putrika Dharma was used, they had mystic powers, and so was it very difficult for them to get a son? Apparently, otherwise they would have no need to take recourse to adoption.
Okay, and my second question is about soul and super soul. So, soul the soul is part of super soul. So, but when soul comes into material existence, material nature, it gets contaminated, but super soul doesn't. So my question is, when it's the same thing, it's a part of that, why one does and why one doesn't?
Your question is, the soul gets contaminated when it comes into the material world, but the super soul does not. Why is that? It's not that the soul is contaminated. The soul remains always pure. But the soul is covered over by illusory energy. Just like the sun can never be contaminated, it might be covered, but your vision of the sun can be covered by the cloud. So the soul is covered over by the illusory energy, because the soul, even though it is qualitatively one as the super soul, it is very, very tiny. And because it is so tiny, it has the tendency to fall victim to the illusory energy. Whereas the Supreme Soul is all-powerful, and the illusory energy is forever within his control. So he never falls within the clutches of the illusory energy. Yes?
As in the purport, it is mentioned that Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharat for Sri Shudra and Jamandir, it was mentioned. So when we read these purports, and even Krishna also mentions in the Bhagavad Gita about when Sri is written along with, they are classified along with Shudras, and we read in many instances about women being less intelligent. So in today's world, where it's all about women empowerment, women liberation, and how women are encouraged to achieve, especially in the Western world, we see that. So how do we explain it to a person who's a lady, a woman who's very modern thinking about these aspects, when they come across these aspects? How do we explain to them in a way that they don't read this in the wrong light or understand this in the wrong way.
Your question is about the different statements made about women in the scriptures, in the Vedic scriptures, and how do you present that to the modern day woman who is living in a different culture. There is nothing demeaning, actually speaking, that is spoken. It is just that everybody has different psychophysical conditions. And that is all there is to it. And because there is some emotional component that is very strong. Ladies in general have a very strong emotional component in their consciousness. Not that men don't have an emotional component, but for ladies generally it is more, generally. And emotion can come in the way of discrimination in taking decisions. So decisions need to be taken on certain criteria, but when emotions become very strong, then we may take decisions based on emotions. So discrimination is also a function of intelligence. So it is in this context that we hear of such statements. So it is not to be seen as a demeaning statement, because having some emotions is not necessarily a bad thing, it's a good thing. But that's the way Krishna has made these different kinds of bodies and minds, so we just have to come to terms with that. Right? Okay, one last question. Yes. One has an inclination to? How does one start inculcating the Brahmanical qualities? Again, by association of devotees and by doing the activities that one is supposed to do as a devotee, by practice, by hearing, by chanting, these Brahmanical qualities will be invoked automatically. So as a devotee, automatically we develop these things. They come of their own accord by chanting Hare Krishna and so on. Okay, it's quite late. One last question. Yes.
How do we think of Krishna even though we are in pure devotional service? How do we think of Krishna while we are sleeping?
How can we think of Krishna while you are sleeping? By thinking of Krishna when you are not sleeping. Then you will dream of Krishna. You will dream of whatever you have been thinking of when you were awake. So if you are thinking of Krishna when you are awake, then you will dream of Krishna also. Okay? Alright, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna.